Rumpus time is over.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Luke's crazy.
Did you hear that, Brian?
Luke, we're gonna have company!
Brian! Bad guys of the galaxies, beware! The defender of the universe is here!
In order to form a more perfect union.
Luke! Brian!
Luke Bryan's!
One margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot.
Stop that! You're not going into a song while I'm here.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Talking Heads.
Hello and welcome to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers. You are listening to Dueling Tangents across Civic Media, broadcasting live here in Madison on the near west side of Madison from the Solidarity Realty Studios. From Mad Radio 92.7 FM, WMDX 1580 AM, and around the state of Wisconsin, on a local civic media radio station near you, we got Evan back on the board. E, how we doing on this fine Tuesday afternoon? We feeling a little bit better, bud?
I possess Laszlo's hierarchy of needs, and therefore, we'll see the sun rays tomorrow, man. We're good. We're good.
Well, we appreciate that you're back. We want to thank again Mr. Aaron Zommers for filling in yesterday in your absence. Hope that you are getting the treatment you need, buddy, to help improve.
Brush your teeth. Brush your teeth, people.
There you go, folks. This is the Dueling Tangents PSA of the day. Brush your teeth. Folks, if you want to join Evan and I, you can share a tangent with us, 844-967-2789. That's 844-96-PARTY. I'm going to be joined at 2:30 for a little Tuesday recombobulation with the editor and founder of the Recombobulation Area, Dan Schaefer. Join in as he does on Tuesday afternoons. We'll talk Wisconsin headlines, as well as hoping to get a chance to pick his brain on the decision last week, about a week and a half ago now, of the Milwaukee Bucks to fire their head coach, Mike Budenholzer, what that means in the coaching carousel that's going on right now. The NBA playoffs still underway, the Eastern and Western Conferences starting up, but other coaches getting fired as well, leading to a coaching carousel. Going to talk to Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area about that as well. We've got some votes coming out of the Joint Finance Committee, the committee responsible for writing most of the Wisconsin biennial budget now that they stripped away many of the provisions included by Democratic Governor Tony Evers, that Republican-led committee taking several votes today. We'll dive into those. But really, the question on the top of my mind, because I saw this story and it was reposted at several different outlets, originated though over at CNN. And E, I want to hear your thoughts on this and get the listeners' thoughts as well. But do we have a final answer on what led to the inflation that we've been facing as a society for the last 12 or more months?
I think we do. But I want to hear the impetus here, you know,
in the context
of this story. But yes, I think we do.
Fair enough. Well, Evan, there was a commodity traded almost like gold, but not quite gold. It was gold surrounded by their egg whites as well. Eggs. For several months now, dating back to December and January, everybody was complaining about the price of eggs. It was all the government spending that led to prices rising for eggs. And now, E, according to this piece over at CNN, those prices have gone splat. Because writer Danielle Viner-Bronner over at CNN, with the headline, "Egg Prices Are Crashing, Here's Why." And it's so fascinating because in this piece, Evan, the journalist, the author of the piece, still, she like swims around it, but she doesn't actually pinpoint the reason that I believe we've
everywhere,
been having.
Man. Yeah, it's infuriating. I'm not seeing people just say it.
She dances around it. She mentions it, but then she just goes back to the, oh, it's supply and demand. But here, reading from the piece over at CNN, for months, the prices of eggs were soaring. Now they're going splat. As of last week, Midwest large eggs, the benchmark for eggs sold in their shells, cost just 94 cents per dozen in the wholesale market, according to Erner Berry, an independent price reporting agency. That's a sharp fall from the $5.46 per carton just 6 months ago. In retail, prices are well above $1 per carton, though they too have been declining. Why the decline? It's because of a reversal of supply-demand trends that caused prices to spike in the first place. That is what this author, Danielle, over at CNN, has to say about it was supply and demand. There was little supply, demand rose, therefore prices rose.
Okay, great. That's just great. Why wasn't there much supply?
Last year, deadly avian flu wiped out a significant number of egg-laying hens, reducing egg supplies. On top of that, farmers had to deal with inflated feed and fuel costs. All true.
Yeah.
Those are true facts about this instance.
Why was fuel costs inflated?
Yeah, very good point.
I mean, dude, you could just keep it going.
I don't believe the Russian invasion of Ukraine is actually even mentioned in this piece, but yes, that absolutely had to do with global supply chains. But Cal Maine, this is now the fifth or sixth paragraph of the piece over at CNN Business, Cal Maine Foods, the largest U.S. egg producer, reported profit growth of over 700% in the quarter ending February 25th because of higher egg prices.
How is this possible, Luke? How is it possible?
As the CNN piece then alludes to, some U.S. lawmakers, like U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren, have asked for more clarity on why prices got so high, raising concerns about possible price gouging. Oh, we're dancing around it. We're not saying that price gouging was the reason.
We're circling in, though.
Now supply is back on track. Though the industry braced for more cases of bird flu this year, the deadly virus seems to be under control. Meanwhile, demand hasn't kept pace. The wholesale price drop began in late March, according to Karen Rispoli, senior egg market analyst at Urner Barry. Prices hit annual lows in early May and have stayed about steady since then, she said. So they're just chalking this up to the demand. They're just saying, oh, demand went away, so prices are now coming down. That's the whole thing. When really, it seems like the price gouging forced demand to disappear and therefore a return to the normal.
And this is a rich topic, right? You can get lots of little jokes, a lot of entertainment. You really can milk this for a lot of content.
Oh, yeah. You know? The jokes about egg prices rising and how you could maybe pay your rent with eggs.
They went splat.
Yeah.
I mean, classic egg joke, right?
Yes.
But
fascinating enough, E.
It pisses me off, man.
Over at the Racine Journal-Times, local outlet picked up this piece from CNN. They include a very interesting graph in their piece in this analysis from CNN, and it shows a 12-month percentage change in the consumer price index from April of 2022 to April of 2023. The percent change, not seasonally adjusted, in these statistics from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, and it shows the percent change of consumer prices for select items. Food was at 7.7% a rate of inflation. So if you really want to say that there's the supply chain, altogether, Evan, the all items were at 4.9%. So that's the benchmark of all of these different items.
Yeah.
But how can you say that I don't quite understand the argument that, oh, it was rampant government spending to return the economy back from the COVID-19 pandemic, that government spending is what caused all of this inflation.
Makes no sense. Sorry.
It doesn't make any sense to me. Or if you want to blame supply chains, if you want to do all of those things, the number one largest increase for percentage change of consumer prices, can you guess what it is, Evan?
Probably not. I mean,
well, if you think it was government spending or supply chains,
that
it would be a small commodity, right?
Absolutely.
What would you think that it would be if it was government spending and supply chain problems? What would have the largest percent change over that 12-month period?
Food. Raw materials.
Exactly. Because you have to have gasoline, you'd think almost would be one of the highest. And it is high up there, but it not the number one. Motor vehicle insurance.
What?
Can you explain to me how the insurance market, unless you factor in for price gouging, is the largest percent change for consumer price index over April 2022 to April 2023?
Honestly, that's kind of crazy. That's wild.
15.5% increase in motor vehicle insurance. The next second highest was cereal and bakery products, 12.4%. And I'm sorry, I don't understand how a chips manufacturing bill or the bipartisan, any of the bipartisan legislation or the American Rescue Plan were the cause for why cereal was high, unless you look at, oh, there was a labor strike at Kellogg's from roughly the final quarter of 2022. And maybe the cereal producers were trying to price gouge to return some of the lost money during that labor strike.
No, whenever I have a conversation with someone about this, it's a short conversation because I just say, look, they're making more money than they've ever made ever before. Like yeah. Literally, oh man, they're rolling
700% profits for the largest egg manufacturer in the United States.
Okay, and that's the end of it for me. That's it. Because clearly they're not feeling the effects of this inflation. Their raw materials, their quote unquote.
Yeah, their profit. Even though they saw a decimation from avian flu, egg prices skyrocketed, and it seems to be that they used the avian flu, the supply chain, government spending as the cover for price gouging.
And
I want to hear your thoughts. 844-967-2789. Exactly, Evan. Who suffers? We got our friend Mark from Prairie du Sac calling in. Mark, your thoughts on inflation and who's responsible for it?
Well, that recovery from that, I mean, the supply chain got kind of smacked upside the head with the whole with the pandemic, where people were, you know, were unable to work and we're still recovering from that. But the Republicans are trying to say, well, it's you know, government spending. Well, the government has to spend money when you know, confronting, you know, national crisis like the pandemic was. Of course, the Republicans didn't think it was ever a crisis anyway. Because, you know, that
no, they downplayed it every turn. They told you not to wear masks. They told you to use ivermectin as a cure-all or hydroxychloroquine, which I'm still mystified that I needed to learn how to pronounce hydroxychloroquine, Mark, because that was being used as a pseudoscience to cure COVID. But we're finding out now, after the fact, we see that the price is rising and the profits still had by these organizations are clearly evidence of price gouging, and it needs to be talked about, because otherwise it's just going to continue to happen, and these corporations are going to make off like bandits, and we, the middle class, the consumers, are going to be the ones that have to pay. Folks, you're listening to Dueling Tangents across Civic Media. If you want to share a tangent with us on this Tuesday afternoon, 844-967-2789. Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers. You're listening to Dueling Tangents across Civic Media. If you want to learn more about what we're doing here as a growing media organization, radio network across the state of Wisconsin, head over to the website civicmedia.us. You can see all the stations, all the fine programs, and keep up to date with where we're going next. You can sign up for updates. Again, the website civicmedia.us. Going to be joined coming up next segment, 2:30, by Dan Schaefer, columnist and founder of the Recombobulation Area. We'll recombobulate on a Tuesday afternoon like we like to do with our friend Dan. Between now and then, you can share a tangent with us here on Dueling Tangents, 844-967-2789, discussing the impacts over the last 12 months of what was driving inflation. What was driving the rising cost for consumers? Was it government spending? Was it all the supply chain? Was it price gouging by corporations, just taking advantage of all of the other excuses out there and jacking up prices to increase their profits? Want to hear your thoughts? 844-967-2789. And it is just baffling to me that this could be excused away for something else than what it seems to be to me. 700% price increase. Profit increase, 700% profit increase. That is not justifiable in anything to excuse away the supply chain woes, the atmosphere that the economy has been in through the last 12, 18, 24 months.
And slowly pumping up, right? This is something that we've been seeing for years and years and years, but it, you know, the pace was different. I mean, we saw something pretty extraordinary happen.
Yeah, that's one of the interesting things as well, Evan, is the piece over at CNN Business where I found this, the breaking down why the egg prices, again, really chalks it up to supply and demand issues. It just says, oh, this is how the economy works. It touches on the corporate price gouging, but it doesn't name that specifically as the cause. But now, again, I was talking about prices of wholesale eggs being less than a dollar now in the month of May. But the grocery stores, the retail outlets for where consumers go and buy eggs, apparently now, Evan, they kind of do a little, they keep the markets more contained.
You can't be changing stuff willy-nilly too quickly.
Well, they don't. They were covering some of the costs when egg prices soared to more than $5 a dozen. They were trying to not scare away consumers with too high prices. They were eating that cost. But now they say, even though the wholesaler price is going lower, it doesn't necessarily mean retailers will lower their prices, said Ernest. So the consumer is still subject to a higher price point, and it'll take a while for that to get shaken out.
This conversation balloons out so quickly. It's why competition is so important.
Well,
right?
The large wholesalers now, they got their 700% profit increase already.
Well, and all our stuff comes from, like, let's be real, like three conglomerate corporations.
I was going to say, I don't know who the parent company is. It may be its own company. It may be a subsidiary of something else,
and you
though.
Have holding
but
companies and
Cal-Maine
trust.
Foods,
yep.
The largest U.S. egg producer. That's the largest producer of eggs. But all the grocery store chains, the grocery stores are doing their own for some, making sure that they're reaping in with all these other corporations are increasing prices as well. So I'm sure it's going to take a little while before they're really certain that the avian flu is gone and we're not going to have those problems before they start dropping egg prices at all grocery stores. Maybe some of them will try to do the competition, Evan, and offer coupons and things like that, sales for the weekly flyer, and try to get consumers to come in and shop there instead of other places. Maybe the competition will rear its head there, but it seems like it's just in every instance in this equation, the consumer gets screwed by the way that these corporations over the last 2 years have just justified increasing their profit margins and saying, oh, well, I'm so sorry. It's supply chain issues.
718% to be exact.
718%. That... It is insane.
How they can even keep a straight face, how people writing, you know, publications writing about this can do so without just laughing.
It should just be easy. It should be, okay, the corporation raked in this much money. That's the reason why the prices skyrocketed.
We suffer. They benefit. It's that simple.
Yeah. Well, and you continually see this. There's shareholder meetings that are going on that are public. We can get this information.
Cal-Maine is a public company, yeah.
Yeah. Some of the largest phone carriers or insurance providers, I'm sure they're having these same conversations on corporate boards. Well, they're like, oh, well, everybody's still buying. Everybody still needs car insurance. You got to have car insurance. People are still paying the higher prices.
That one is so ridiculous. I can hardly believe it.
It shocked me. It was just so blatantly clear that has nothing to do with supply chain, with anything. Vehicle prices, yeah. I can understand. If there's a shortage of chips, and that's why President Biden and his administration with Congress worked to pass a bipartisan chips manufacturing bill to return the manufacturing of those silicon-based computer chips back to the United States to try to thwart off future problems when it comes to supply chain woes and make those here at home. That was something that this administration took a step to so that cars wouldn't be in such a subject to higher prices because of the supply chain walls.
The insurance industry is... They're just looking ahead. There's going to be less cars, so they got to get theirs now.
Well, what it is there's a brand new stadium that really needs a sponsorship agreement, and that insurance provider really needs to sponsor that major league sports arena or stadium or fields or whatever it may be. Folks, you're listening to Dueling Tangents. We're going to dive in, recombobulate with our friend Dan Schaefer. columnist and founder of the Recombobulation Area. Coming up next, we will still take your tangents. You can call or text 844-967-2789. You can also follow the show on Twitter at Dueling Tangents. We're going to continue the conversation and recombobulate when we get back. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. You're listening to Dueling Tangents across Civic Media. You can download the Civic Media app and take us with you and all the fine programming produced here at Civic Media with you on the go. Go over to the Apple App Store, Google Play Store, search Civic Media, however you get apps on your smartphone devices, and it's free to download. Easy enough. Civic Media, download the app, take us with you on the go. And here on a Tuesday afternoon, I am joined now by the founder and columnist of the Recombobulation Area, Dan Schaefer. And congratulations is in order, cleaning up four more awards from the Milwaukee Press Club, including gold for best blog. Dan, congratulations on that and excellent work all around for the hardware.
Thank you, sir. Much appreciated. It was a pretty good night for our little scrappy independent publication at the Milwaukee Press Club Awards. Best blog. I wasn't even sure we are a blog. Now I'm pretty sure we're a blog. That'll be our new tagline.
Now I'm certain. Now I'm certain we are a blog. There you go. I didn't have any votes, but I would have been voting gold for all of the different categories for you if I did have any votes. But glad to see the accomplishments, the Recombobulation Area, and your hard work being appreciated at the Milwaukee Press Club last week. It's really terrific work that you've been doing. Really excited that you're joining us here on the airwaves because there's no shortage of slow news days here in Wisconsin. I'm waiting for one. We don't seem to have one.
No, it doesn't seem to happen. You know, we got through the whole April election cycle and it was like, oh, okay, now maybe things will calm down. Nope, no. Now it's been, you know, about a month now since that, since all of the dust settled from that. And now we're just onto the budget, onto the shared revenue, onto, you know, the next wave of craziness in Wisconsin politics. So, yeah, I was talking to some people from out of town at the Press Club Awards last week, and it's just like, yeah, we don't have days off here. It's nonstop.
No shortage of news to keep an eye on, and it's very important to subscribe to excellent outlets like the Recombobulation Area. You can find Dan's column on Substack. I guess the blog on Substack. That's what we're referring to right now.
Pretty sure we're just a blog.
Pretty sure just a blog. Well, Dan, we're going to have some excellent 5 hours of content. I'm looking forward to being able to keep an eye on it. But tomorrow, the State Assembly is slated for 5 hours to discuss changes or amendments, however they're going to do it, to the shared revenue proposal that will be before the State Assembly. And your thoughts on the Republican proposal and what you believe is going to come out of that 5-hour debate session tomorrow.
Well, I think it's, you know, this is an incredibly important bill, and it is, as we've been covering at the Recombobulation Area, Marquette professor Phil Rocco has been contributing a number of pieces at the Recombobulation Area, really analyzing this bill. It is a deeply flawed bill to reform the shared revenues, the already deeply broken shared revenue system in the state of Wisconsin. You know, it is not a clean bill. I think that's what Governor Evers at least signaled that he's hoping for. And by a clean bill, he's saying something that does not have all these strings attached, these stipulations, these rules, regulations, what have you, on all sorts of local communities through the increase in shared revenue. And not only are there all these strings attached as opposed to Evers' proposal, which was in his budget, which did not have all these strings attached, it's far less money. for the vast majority of municipalities across the state of Wisconsin. So, you know, as we've been kind of hitting this point over and over again at the recombobulation area, this is a bill that has more rules and restrictions and bureaucracy and less direct funding for local governments than what Tony Evers proposed in his budget. So I think it's really important that Evers came out and said that he wanted to see improvements to this bill before he was able to sign it. We'll see if the assembly comes back with anything tomorrow, because they haven't made anything public yet about any potential amendments, any potential changes to this bill, whether a new bill, you know, would be brought in, because there are a lot of problems with it. But it is such an important thing to happen to, you know, send some of this state funding back to local governments that have been starved by state government so much over the past several years, that it is really important to get this bill across the finish line. But right now we're in the point where, you know, we need to see the sausage get made, and we need to make sure it's done right as well.
Yeah, and there was less than 48 hours that the public was even aware that the Republican lawmakers in the legislature had a proposed bill for addressing shared revenue before it got its first committee hearing, and really it felt like it was being rushed through. But there is that sense that Republican lawmakers are now kind of aware that there is a side-by-side comparison happening. There is a Evers proposal versus a Republican lawmaker proposal, and they're being compared. We can tell by the headline today with the Joint Finance Committee going forward and raising the pay for public defenders by $1 more than what the Evers proposal would have done. So it feels like a little bit of petty politics being played by our Republican lawmakers. But your thoughts on the Joint Finance Committee, the Republican-led committee that writes the budget, advancing that. It was unanimous. All 16 members of the Joint Finance Committee did vote for it. So your thoughts on that unanimous vote earlier today.
Hey, let's hear it for bipartisanship in the state of Wisconsin. Doesn't happen often. That we get anyone
fueled by a little bit of pettiness, I feel like.
By a little bit of pettiness, yeah. And you know, getting that one little bit more out of the Republican bill. Yeah, you know what? Maybe it was a good thing that Evers put that proposal where it was, because it was, you know, a number that clearly Republicans were comfortable with, and they really want to go that extra mile and give it a dollar more to our
public defenders.
Yeah. Public defenders.
Yeah. And well,
public defenders, or was it district attorneys, or
there were some changes as well in the proposal for district attorneys and the staffing of those offices. The pay increase, though, where we're seeing a very, very large shortage is the public defenders in district attorney offices around the state. A very interesting quote from a piece over at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, written up earlier today on this topic by Laura Schulte, is from former attorney general candidate for the Republican Party here in Wisconsin last year, and still current Fond du Lac County District Attorney Eric Toney, said during a news conference that the Republican proposal would be, quote, transformational. When we deal with crime, politics must be set aside, and I'm really proud of the work the legislature, based on what is going on, to what this is going to mean for prosecutors across Wisconsin. Bumbled the quote a little bit, but very interesting that the former Republican candidate for attorney general saying, when we deal with crime, politics must be set aside. Just.
Yeah, that's certainly something that we've seen over the past 18 months in Wisconsin politics, is that crime has really been set aside.
Yes.
As a political issue. It certainly hasn't been used as in every single ad. As a wedge issue by Republicans for the past 18 months.
Oh, I think it's a lot longer than 18 months. We've been seeing it since the 2020.
About this particular election cycle, most, you know, that's fresh in all of our minds here, but yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely been one of those go-to issues that Republicans have leaned on. And so for the Republican candidate for attorney general just saying, oh yeah, When we're dealing with crime, we got to put politics aside. That quote just jumped out to me, Dan. Another side-by-side comparison that we're able to see, not necessarily just when it comes to the governor's proposal versus the Republican lawmaker's proposal on the budget, we can also see a side-by-side comparison for the state of Wisconsin with other states, neighboring states, like Minnesota. Interestingly enough, Dan, earlier today, with unanimous vote through their House, the Minnesota legislature passing a bill to remove lead pipes from water lines in Minnesota. I didn't see any complaints that, you know, too much money would be going towards Minneapolis or St. Paul. Your thoughts on the Minnesota state government being able to address lead in their water lines?
Yeah, this is something that Tony Evers put in his budget as well. Some money to replace lead pipes. There's been obviously a huge effort to do that at the federal level as well through the bipartisan infrastructure law. But in the third consecutive budget cycle, Wisconsin Republicans voted this out of the budget. And now famously, I think, in 2019 was when Robin Voss and John Nygren and a number of the state Republican leadership kind of balked at this proposal from Tony Evers. Because, as they said, too much money would go to Milwaukee. Mind you, the funding was going to be appropriated evenly to all places that had lead pipes in their city's water system across Wisconsin. Just so happens Milwaukee has a lot of them. I don't know if people know this, but Milwaukee's an older city. It was built a
more,
long time
more
ago.
More and more people are saying that Milwaukee's an
more
older city.
More and more
city.
People are saying that Milwaukee is better. Many things about Milwaukee even predate the state of Wisconsin.
Yes.
And so Milwaukee's like many older cities across the state, had lead laterals. So there's like about 70,000 lead laterals in the city of Milwaukee, and there's about 170 some thousand across the state of Wisconsin. So we would like those fixed in Milwaukee. And there has not been a good answer for them because there was a big crisis about this at the city level, you know, under Tom Barrett's administration, and his health director or his health commissioner resigned over the issue. There was an investigation over it. Nobody ended up getting charged, of course, because that's how these investigations of public officials tend to go. Mm-hmm. But it really did highlight the issue in Milwaukee. And it's just remarkable to note that, you know, you go across the other side of the Mississippi River and you have a state that is unanimous in its support for replacing lead pipes. And here on the other side of it in Wisconsin, it's because Republicans in the legislature keep blocking this over and over and over again. It's an issue that just annoys me to no end. It is just clear partisanship on this issue. And it's super frustrating.
Yeah, folks, you're listening to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers, joined by columnist and founder of the Recombobulation Area, Dan Schaefer. And Dan, it is pretty difficult to see the side-by-side comparisons since 2010 for the state of Wisconsin versus the state of Minnesota. I try not to look at it too closely just because, very much like the Milwaukee Bucks' early exit out of the playoffs, it's still very raw. It's hard to see, I'm a little too close to the issue, I guess. And it brings more sadness than anything else. And so, hoping to dive into the coaching carousel, we do have an update in the sports world. Madison, here in my neck of the woods, we are going to get a professional women's soccer team by 2025. The USL Super League bringing women's professional soccer to Wisconsin. I'm pretty excited about that. Don't know if you're following any of the soccer world or not, but I got my Madison Forward cap on today, Dan, because the Forward owners are the ones hoping to bring the female soccer, professional soccer, to Madison in the next 2 years.
That sounds pretty great. I'm not a big soccer fan, but I have watched a Premier League match a couple weeks ago for the first time, like after the Bucks.
Looking for something else. You just jonesing for something else.
That's exactly it. Like, I'm not ready to get into the, you know, I'm not that big of big into like the NFL draft or like a bunch of the other stuff that's going on right now. So and the Brewers, like, it's a ways away from, like, being, you know, like the competitive part of the season where you're watching the standings every day and things like that. So I watched the Premier League game. I guess I'm an Arsenal fan now. Apparently. I don't know.
You've got time. It doesn't have to be the first match that you watch is all of a sudden who you become the biggest fan of.
But I'm excited for Madison. I'm excited for Madison.
You're dipping your toes. Glad to hear it. Folks, you're listening to Dueling Tangents. We're joined by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area. Going to talk about that NBA coaching carousel that the Bucks find themselves on and some more Wisconsin headlines when we return. You can share a tangent with us, 844-967-2789. You can call or text. You can also follow the show on Twitter, at Dueling Tangents. We got one more segment left in the day. Share your tangents with us here on Dueling Tangents. And we'll meet by the big red tree. There's a place up ahead and I'm going. Come along, come along with me. Come
on. I'm so happy 'cause today found my friends in my head.
Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers. You're listening to Dueling Tangents across Civic Media, and I am joined by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area that you can find on Substack. You should subscribe. It's award-winning local independent journalism that you can't find anywhere else. So head over to Substack and subscribe to the Recombobulation Area. And Dan, when you're not talking about politics, and it's a little sad because it is an earlier offseason than we anticipated, you online like to talk about the Milwaukee Bucks as well. And
sure do.
Yeah.
Sure do.
It's a very raw time, though, right now, watching Miami still in it, going to the Eastern Conference Finals. There was an interesting quote by Giannis after the early playoff departure, saying that the Bucks were playing to win a championship and the Heat were playing to beat us. And I think that that was probably the best analysis. You put all the other analysis away. After that, that quote summed up that series between the Bucks and the Heat. And they ultimately decided to part ways with head coach Mike Budenholzer, who is apparently on a lake somewhere here in Wisconsin enjoying a cold one, with his goodbye to the city of Milwaukee and the team. And now the Bucks find themselves in kind of maybe the grass was greener, but not the case. I'm not quite sure because it seems like there's a couple different options that are coming through. Bucks getting permission to interview a number of assistant coaches around the league. Your thoughts on kind of the lay of the land with Budenholzer and other head coaches being shown the door by other NBA organizations around the league?
Yeah, I mean, we just saw today the Philadelphia 76ers let Doc Rivers go. The Phoenix Suns let Monty Williams go a couple days ago. So it's going to be a big offseason across the league for coaching hires. I mean, there's a couple other situations that I'm kind of keeping an eye on to see what happens. Ty Lue with the Los Angeles Clippers is a kind of an interesting case. I'm interested to see how that shakes out because there was some animosity between Lou and the front office during the season there, kind of hoping that he might be available for the Bucks because I think he's a pretty good coach. But they sure are casting a wide net, though, aren't they? I mean, there's a lot of names that have been in the mix, you know, that have been reported over the last couple of weeks that they'd be interviewing or have interest in or whatever it might be. You know, some candidates that have been, I think, good ones. Others, like Mark Jackson, I would be not at all excited about. But yeah, it's just a really interesting moment for the league and for the Bucks to try and make this really big decision because they have a bunch of other big decisions to make this offseason as well. And I think this is, you know, the coaching hire has to be the first one before they kind of make the rest of what's on their list for what was already going to be a very challenging summer for a lot of the decisions that they were going to have to make as an organization, and obviously accelerated through the early loss. And speaking of, you mentioned the Heat. I'm convinced the Heat are probably going to win the finals at this point because of
Do you think
how this offseason has gone. or from how this postseason has gone. Like this has been a really ridiculous postseason, and now I'm just like, look, all bets are off. Jimmy Butler's playing like prime Michael Jordan. Like, let's just see how far they can go with this.
Yeah, I have a hard time cheering for the Heat at all. I almost like the mentality of like cheering for the team that knocked you out, just because you can be like, well, maybe had they not gotten knocked out by that team, maybe the Bucks could have went and rode it all the way. But also,
had Kevin Love not slid under Giannis on that stupid charge play,
yes,
could all be different. Yes,
and it would be interesting to see what would happen if it were the Bucks and the Celtics and the Lakers and the Nuggets. I think I'm cheering for Denver on this one. With the four remaining teams, I wanted Philly almost. I found myself rooting for them, and when it didn't, I love PJ. I thought it was going to be the PJ Tucker game on game 7. He started out the quarter with double digits. He was cruising along, and then Philadelphia just got swamped in that third quarter. But it is interesting to see where the Bucks are going to land with the decision for the head coach. Part of the decisions that the team has to make, the organization has to make this offseason, Brooke Lopez's contract, he played like he should be one of the highest paid centers in the league, but whether or not the Bucks can afford that is going to be a huge question, and I believe Middleton's on the player option, correct? It's going to be interesting to see what happens with that contract.
Yeah, he's got to play. He can opt into the final year of his deal for $40 million. Or he can opt out and get more of a long-term deal. So, like, if he were to get, you know, something along the lines of, like, let's say 4 years, $100 million, instead of taking the 1 year, $40 million, and then gambling for next year, like, that might be an option for him. You know, I read – there's a great piece, if you're into this kind of thing, at the Athletic. My buddy Eric Name wrote a really good breakdown this week of the challenges – that the Bucks face, and if they want to have like basically any flexibility under the cap, they're going to have to re-sign Middleton to a lower number than that $40 million. Going to have to sign Brooke to something in a reasonable level, and they might even have to salary dump one of Grayson Allen, Pat Connaughton, or Bobby Portis just to have any kind of flexibility. So it's they've got some really difficult decisions waiting for them this offseason.
Yeah, I have a feeling of those three that you just said for salary dump, I think Bobby may be the safest just because the city and the organization loves him, but it's going to be hard to see where all of the salary cap math shakes out. I'm curious to know if ownership, you know, just promises to send Brooke to Disney, like, per diem, like, once a month, and it's just all expenses paid, kind of just pay off his trips to Disney and can kind of work that into the contract negotiations. Maybe we could get Brooke at a cheaper price.
Let's get real creative with Brooke Lopez's contract.
I want to see
Laden with and make it tied to Disney trips or something like
that. Yeah, he could use one of Jimmy Haslam's got a private jet. I'm sure he can use the private jet to go to Disney whenever he wants. Come on, let's get some creativity behind that contract. I want to see.
There we go. If he averages more than 2.5 blocks per game,
he could do it.
He can stay inside the Magic Kingdom or whatever.
Folks, really appreciate you, Dan, joining me on this edition of Dueling Tangents. Dan, can you let the listeners know one more time where they can find you on Substack so that they can keep up with all of the headlines, the politics, the current events, but also breakdown of the Milwaukee Bucks' difficult offseason ahead of them?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Dan R. Schaefer, and you can find my work at the Recombobulation Area at .substack.com. Or find us on Instagram. I would check us out. We're doing a little bit more on Instagram.
There
we go.
If you're
not following us on Instagram, I would go check us out there.
There we go. You heard it, folks. Follow Dan on Instagram, Twitter, and subscribe on Substack. If you missed any portion of this show, go check out the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google, or Stitcher. Dan, thank you again for joining me. Can't wait to recombobulate next Tuesday. We can discuss the 5 hours of debate around the shared revenue that plan before the assembly tomorrow. Appreciate it, Dan. Take it easy.
Thanks. Have a good one.